We're just going to wait for the courtroom to clear. And then we will go forward.
Did you know that Brett Kamen has been appointed to represent the leadership? What time?
No.
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
Yeah. He's
terrific.
Oh, he is. Apparently, he has advised him over the last couple of years down at Guantanamo, and he was appointed by the Department of Defense to represent him.
That is something.
No, he's excellent.
All right. Thank you for your patience, everyone. We're going to go on to case number 102577. It's the United States versus Wasson. And we are going to hear from Ms. Hightower Henney.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I didn't know for sure if I would have a voice or not, but this is what we have. This case is a direct appeal from the Central District of Illinois. We are requesting that the Court reverse the judgment below because the lower court has improperly denied the appellant's motion to dismiss based on a severe speedy trial violation.
So you just... How much of the last argument were you here for?
I was here for the entire thing.
Oh, my dear girl. Okay.
We, of course, have outlined three issues in our brief.
My dear woman. What did I just say?
But we do want to focus on the speedy trial argument today, regardless of the previous argument. As you are well aware, the Speedy Trial Act does require that the trial commence within 70 days. And
let me just stop you right there, because magic words were said here. That's for the ends of justice, and the court specifically cited the complexity of the case, and so why is it though? Why doesn't that comply with NAPADOP?
You're correct. The court did cite the magic words at every continuance. But the difference here is that just making those findings as magic words on the record does not suffice for the specific reasons that Zedner and NAPADOP. NAPADOP was different for the reason that the court did give reasons, but on appeal, counsel argued that the reasons weren't expressed enough. Yet we are arguing that the court in this case did not give reasons, that the court made the ends of justice findings without specific reasons.
Yeah, but how do we get past the fact that Mr. Wasson's counsel sought the continuance that was granted on February 7th? And although, of course, it was the government that requested the continuance that was granted on August 22nd, Mr. Wasson's counsel joined in that request, and here we have the district court addressing Mr. Wasson himself, ascertaining that he had no objection to that continuance. I am having a lot of difficulty understanding why you are coming in here and arguing against what is almost perfect.
Your Honor, respectfully, I do disagree.
Oh, I hate that word. We all hate that word. But go ahead, use it.
The sandbagging issue that the government did argue in its response brief was that it comes from this court, and that was the Larson case that was pre-Zedner, and we're arguing that the sandbagging issue is no longer relevant post-Zedner because Zedner made it clear that there are no prospective waivers, so that it doesn't matter that the defendant doesn't object or raises continuances. The Speedy Trial Act simply requires that the defendant bring a motion prior to trial, a motion to dismiss. And so the sandbagging issue just simply adds these extra textual limitations that the Zedner court specifically said are not proper, and that would only allow some loopholes to be put into the act.
Zedner's 2006, and Napadal and Adams are 2010.
That's correct.
And what you want us to do is overrule Napadal, and I am here to tell you, I'm not going to do it. I don't know about the two sitting with me.
Well,
no, the thing is, like, here the district court said, I understand the problems defense counsel has in reviewing voluminous discovery. I believe the motion needs no argument. It's meritorious. The court will grant it, and talks about the fact that there's a right to a speedy trial, but because of the amount of discovery, he understands it. He doesn't want to set a premature date. Then, as Judge Rovner pointed out on the 22nd, the defense attorney said that the co-defendant's plea profoundly affected his case, and he was still going through discovery. I just don't get it. I'm with Judge Rovner. I don't see how you could have a better record here.
When a case is determined to be complex, and I think all the parties agreed, right? It was a complex case.
The parties did agree that at the outset of the case. And
does it ever become non-complex?
We don't know that because the court did not make specific inquiries to get those reasons on the record.
A million documents just don't disappear.
Yeah.
Correct, and the Act does cite to, of course, the complexity of cases, but it does say that if a case is so unusual and so complex, and now with the previous arguments, that case, I would argue, is that so unusual and so complex that requires sort of this continuance and a proper continuance.
Does the judge have to say that every time when the defense or the government requests a continuance? I know I said this 2 months ago when we continued this trial, that it was very complex and the ends of justice required, but on subsequent motions to continue, does he have to repeat that?
I would argue, yes, he does, that the express reasons do need to be found at every hearing, and that these implicit findings and the sequence of events that have been mentioned in the government's response are not the specific reasons that Zedner has spelled out, that the court does need to set the specific reasons on the record regarding every and each continuance. And specifically at the February 7th continuance, yes, the court did say that the motion is meritorious. It doesn't need argument. But again, this is a passing reference that Zedner has disallowed and prohibited.
Please stop talking about a case that, you know, that where we've got Napadal, which says when facts have been presented to the court and the court has acted on them, it is not necessary to articulate those same facts in a continuance order. So why don't you go to your next argument?
Yes, Your Honor. If I may just briefly mention again just a difference in Napadal with
we're done with that. Okay.
Thank you.
You've got to know when to give up.
Appellate Advocacy 101.
Your Honor, with that, if there are no questions, then we did also brief the issue of sentencing, and we do want to notice that issue is a long shot at this court, but we are preserving that issue for
Demaray and
Supreme
good
Court.
For you for doing that.
And then the ex post facto, that was the other issue that we also have briefed, and we just argue that there was no proof at trial that his actions occurred post-2001 for the sentencing guidelines, and those are the arguments that we've made, as well as the Cheeks argument, but again, we know that is an uphill battle on the Cheeks argument. My client, though, was advised, and he was sort of this low man on the totem pole, that he was advised by management, legal counsel, accountants, and such, that this was a proper structure. So with that, I will. And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Bass, come on up. How are you?
Very well. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Timothy Bass, on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, I've learned in listening to oral arguments that if the judges state your position better than you do, then it's time to sit down. So I won't I don't want to rehash the speedy trial. But if I may make one point, and that has to do with the issue of judicial estoppel that is raised in the government's brief, which is, in the government's view, the same thing as this court has referred to as sandbagging. And it does survive Zednar, because Zednar said specifically this would be a different case if, remember, Zednar had to do with a district court who elicited a prospective waiver for all time of the Speedy Trial Act, and the Supreme Court said that is clearly invalid. But it would be a different case if the defendant had succeeded in convincing the district court within the confines of the Speedy Trial Act to continue the case, that the estoppel issue would be a different question. Well, that different question is our case. Because with respect to the February 7th, 08 continuance, as Your Honor, Judge Robner mentioned, Mr. Wasson made the motion to continue, which was joined in by Mr. Wagamon's attorney. Not only did he make the motion, but what's omitted from Mr. Wasson's brief is that he told the district court, I will be harmed if you don't grant the motion. And he's taking the position in this court that that exclusion of time should be counted. Now, if that's not taking a different, clearly inconsistent position, and if that's not an example of succeeding in taking that inconsistent position to secure a advantage to the defendant, then it would be difficult to conceive of what a situation would be. So the judicial estoppel, i.e. sandbagging claim, survives Zednar, and I would urge Your Honors to apply that as another reason for rejecting the Speedy Trial Act claim in this case.
I'd like to ask you something about the loss amount, because Mr. Wasson noted in his reply brief that much of the loss predated the guidelines change in 2001. Does that affect your argument as to the propriety of applying the later version of the guidelines?
No, Your Honor, because this is a simple... This case is an example of where the law may change during the course of a conspiracy, which one of the counts charged against the defendant was conspiracy. So as long as the conspiracy continues and the conspiratorial acts continue following the change in the law, then the change of the law in the law is irrelevant. And that's what occurred here, even if you put aside Demery, because the indictment and some of the accounts, some of the substantive counts in the indictment post-date 2001 when the change to the guideline took place. In fact, the conduct occurred into 2003. So we're more than a year past the change in the law when the in the period into which the defendant's conduct continued. So the short answer to your question, Your Honor, is that the conduct occurred post-change in the law. And finally, Your Honors, if I may make one point with respect to the sufficiency of the evidence in the Cheek claim, because I heard that issue raised by counsel and as well as in the previous argument. Simply stating that you have a good faith belief in the law, as Mr. Wasson repeatedly did in this case, to the people to whom he was selling the system, is not exhibiting good faith. Because all that is simply saying, I'm not guilty because I said so. There has to be some objective demonstration of good faith, particularly in light of the overwhelming evidence of notice to the defendant and his acts of bad faith. And so, unlike the previous case, this was a bench trial. The district court considered that argument and rejected it, and certainly the record supports that finding. So for those reasons, Your Honors, we would respectfully request that the judgment in all respects be affirmed. Thank you.
Mr. Bass, is Hightower Henny?
5 minutes and a half.
Okay. We'll give her two. Yeah, I'll give her two.
Unless the court has further questions, we would waive our rebuttal.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's looking a gift judge in the mouth. Thank you. All right, case is taken under advisement. Thanks.